Saddam Hussein used fear and violence to gain absolute control over the people of Iraq. An intricate intelligence network kept track of what people said and did, where they went, and with whom. The overthrow of his regime means that Iraqis can talk freely about life under Saddam. NPR's Jackie Northam reports from Baghdad.
For more than three decades, most Iraqis lived in unimaginable fear, going through their days not trusting their neighbors, their colleagues, or their own family, unsure if any unchecked words or gestures would lead to a midnight knock on the door by Iraq's dreaded security police. In 1982, Abu Jassim Kathemi, a Shia Muslim, was arrested for praying. Kathemi says the police interrogated him for several days.
At the beginning, they hit me on the sole of on foot. They call it falaqa. They tied the legs and put us on back and lifted up and hit by pipes. After that, they hung us from our hand, put back by handcuff or by wire or by like belt, and hung in the seal by hook. And our legs are not touch the earth and hit on my back by. I exposed this process for about 3 to 4 times, each time about 1 hour or more than that.
Kathemi says he was 27 years old at the time and was able to withstand the beatings. So police tried another tactic. Kathemi distinctly remembers what they said.
I will bring your sister, I will bring your mother, and I will do a bad thing to her in front of your eyes. So anyone became crazy, and I told him, give me a white paper and I will sign it, and you put what you want of accusation or of charge, I will sign.
Kathemi was charged with sedition and spent the next decade sharing a tiny cell with more than 30 other men. He says there were spies in the cell, and often he and others were taken out and beaten and then placed in solitary confinement. Even now, 5 years after he was released, Kathemi's incarceration stays with him.
Sometimes I fear nightmares, fear, dreams, bad dreams. I am in the prison with my friends, and they want to send us to the death.
Kathemi now volunteers at the Committee of Free Prisoners, a newly formed organization that's trying to discover the fate of hundreds of thousands of Iraqis who were sent to prison and never returned. Volunteers try to sort through more than 1 million documents stuffed into battered filing cabinets, burlap bags, and cardboard boxes that fill several rooms of a large house on the banks of the Tigris River. The documents are police and military intelligence reports. Many were found by looters in homes and police stations and brought here. Others were discovered at the military intelligence headquarters a couple of blocks away. That's where some torture instruments were also found.
There is a belt, but there's metal in it. So this belt has electricity in it.
A traction table with black cushions on it and an electrified belt attached to it was used to extract confessions out of Iraqis. 39-year-old Saad Hamid was arrested and put in prison for speaking out against Saddam Hussein and the government. Hamid says he was strapped to the table several times during his four-year incarceration.
They stretch him, they tie their legs, they tie their hands, they put his head on that machine, the pulling machine. Then they keep stretching him until he give confession, day after day. It's not every day, but you know, sometimes they call it a party. At night they come and to torture us. It's like a party for them.
Hamid says the reason for torturing him was simple: to prevent him from insulting Saddam.
It's for future reasons, so you will never think of, when you get out of the prison, to curse anybody of his family and never talk about the Al-Ba'ath party.
Both Hamid and Kathemi were relatively lucky. They were released from prison and returned home to their families. But for many families, the nightmare of Saddam's rule hasn't ended because they're not sure what happened to their loved ones.
Students, Baghdad, 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 Basra.
Almost every document collected by the Committee of Free Prisoners gives an excruciating account of what happened to ordinary Iraqis who fell into the web of Saddam's intelligence network. On the front of some reports are simply scrawled the name of the prisoner and the word executed. 38-year-old Maher Hashem Hamid slowly flips through a large stack of files.
I am here to look to my father and my brother because Saddam taking my father and my brother about 20 years ago. And I don't know about anything about her. Killing, is life, died, I don't know.
Hamid says he has searched through more than 1,000 files with no luck. He says there's really only one thing he wants to know.
I am very, very sure. He is dead. He is dead. Now I am here to know where he is dead and the place. It's important. Very, very important. To visit him, to say hello.
But it's slow going for Hamid. He becomes distracted as he sifts through the reports, especially the ones concerning children. He opens one dog-eared file and looks at old black and white photographs attached to the front cover. Two achingly young faces smile shyly into the camera.
Maybe seven years. Maybe. What he is doing to Saddam, this baby? What he is doing to kill him? What?
Hamid searches unsuccessfully for any details about why the children were brought into the police or what happened to them. There are many stories about children unwittingly condemning their parents, or the Iraqi secret police using parents to help track down their children.
This is my son, Ali.
Jassim Al-Rubaya proudly holds up a picture of his son, Ali, who was a captain in Iraq's Republican Army before he decided to desert. A few days after his son fled, Rubaya, his four other sons, and his wife were arrested. Rubaya spent the next 10 months in jail. He was released for a short while until his son, Ali, was captured in December. Then Rubaya ended up in prison again.
After 60 days, you know, when I was in the jail, they took us to a court. The judge wanted to question us. They blindfolded my eyes and handcuffed. And when he wanted to question me, they took off my blindfolded and there where I saw Ali. This is where we met each other.
Father and son spent the next 2 weeks at the notorious Abu Ghraib prison on the outskirts of Baghdad. Rubaya said they had many heartfelt talks during that time.
I don't want him to feel let down or anything. I want him to be proud of himself. I know it's killing me, it's tearing me apart, you know, inside. But I didn't want him to feel anything except the pride he has given to all Iraqi people. Well, he won't let his people down by following the regime orders.
But then, on April 1st, less than a week before U.S. forces first entered Baghdad, Rubaya says jailers came and got Ali and 14 other men.
After they called Ali and his colleagues, the 15 of them, after 2 minutes, they heard gunfire. He thought they were executed.
Rubaya never found his son's body. Today, Abu Ghraib prison is deserted. Saddam and his government are gone. And the gut-wrenching fear that gripped Iraqis for so many years is over. But not the memories, nor the pain. Jackie Northam, NPR News, Baghdad.